Thanks for listening to this Word in Your Ear podcast. If you'd like to get early access to all our productions ad-free, priority booking for our live events, and to take part in our weekly quiz, go to patreon.com/wordinyourear for more details.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
You're listening to a podcast from The Word.
Okay, stat waddy game, and I'm going first.
Go on.
The Vertigo label. You know, we were talking about recently landfill indie. You know,
yep. Well,
you know, indie wasn't the only genre that had a kind of landfill period to it, you know. And I often think that the essential home of landfill prog music was the Vertigo label, okay?
Oh, right, good.
In the early 70s.
That fabulous label that you used to study, you used to stare at as it went round.
And obviously the Vertigo label had a number of successful groups, Black Sabbath and so forth, but it had loads of groups that you may not have heard about ever again, okay? So, five names, because I always do five.
Good, that's good.
Six, I do five.
Yeah.
Okay, five names who were on the Vertigo label in the early 70s. One of them is made up. Here we go. Freedom. Frumpy. Gravy Train. Love Muscle. and Warhorse. There you go. Freedom. Frumpy, Gravy
Train. Those are
Train,
fantastic.
Love Muscle and Warhorse.
I think, well, Gravy Train and Warhorse, I've got a vague feeling I've actually heard of. Frumpy is brilliant. Frumpy was a word of the time. Freedom was a thing, very much a thing of the time. I'm going for, because I think it's a contemporary expression, actually, I'm going for Love Muscle, because I think it's a later expression.
It's,
but I'm probably wrong.
It's not a later expression, but you are right in thinking it's the one I put in.
That's really good.
Because actually, Alice Cooper had an album quite early on called Muscle of Love in the 70s.
Oh, right, okay.
So
very good, as he would. Yeah.
But anyway, freedom.
That's very good. Landfill prog. Okay, look, mine is unbelievably niche, actually. I have to say, it's very, very, very niche. Bit of an experiment. It involves Graham Fellows. Do you remember Graham Fellows, the comedian who invented Jilted John?
Jilted John, yeah.
He also invented a character called John Shuttleworth, which I'm pretty sure you're familiar with. He was a failed kind of cabaret singer from Yorkshire.
Very good.
In a car coat with a kind of Bon Tempe keyboard. And his songs are very kind of, very cream cracker. They're very 60s Alan Bennett. You know, and I think you know some of them. Okay, six of his song titles, which are all really...
He's always blending six with you.
All right, I could easily cut one out.
Six song titles,
okay. And
I've got to work out which one of these is.
Yeah, one of these is made up by me, all right? Okay, here's the first. Up and down like a bride's nightie. Right? The second is two cherry bees in a Ford Cortina.
Yeah.
The third one is one cup of tea is never enough, but two is one too many.
Yeah.
Third is I can't go back to savoury now. That's good. Then there's one foot in the gravy and the smells like white spirit. So out of those, can you...
Okay.
That's a tricky one. Out of those, can you pick the ringer?
The first one is the ringer.
Oh no, up and down like Brian Snyder.
Oh really?
No, that was his big calling card. Yeah, which is very first time I heard that expression, because it's a very 70s expression, isn't it?
No, well, it was. You and I used to work with an ad manager, Rod Sopper, used to use that expression all the time. It was up and down like a bride's
nightie. Like a bride's nightie. So he was the one who had millions of expressions for raw steak, didn't he? He'd go into a restaurant and say, "Can I have a raw steak, please?" And then when it arrived, he'd go, "Do I hear lowing?" A good vet could have that back on his feet in 10 minutes.
Rod, where he used to say, you know, "How you feeling, Rod?" He says, "Never entirely without pain."
That's right.
These are all jokes come from the early 80s. We still remember these. Anyway, so I got that wrong. Okay. So
Brain Sam, sorry you did, but there we are.
Which is the one you made up?
A lot of, the one I made up was 2 cherry bees and a Ford Cortina. The rest are real. And what it smells like, white spirit, was actually quite a big deal, actually. That did quite, and one foot in the gravy, too. It became quite well known.
That's very
good. What a great man.
That's very good.
Very good.
So you win this week. I have correspondence. I sound like Cyril Fletcher in That's Life, you know. Do you remember that?
I do.
Sit in a button-back chair and I'm grateful to Mrs. Snodgrass from, you know, Market Raisin for drawing my attention to the following.
To this funny-shaped potato. That's right. Yeah. Didn't he wear a bow tie? I think he did. Yeah,
he certainly did. Kevin Walsh has been in touch, and I just thought I was rather taken by this because he's a great fan of... of the series of Word in Your Attic videos that we've been doing. He's got a very organized approach to viewing them. There's a particular time of day in the evening, I think before dinner or whatever, he gets them up on the telly, and him and the GLW, the good lady wife, sit down and watch them. And he finds them engrossing. She finds the kind of level of obsession kind of vaguely hilarious. You know,
right? Sure it is. Yeah.
Fair enough.
Very familiar. Attention to detail.
But she had an idea as a consequence of looking at these videos. And she actually came to him. She'd found an article about the best shelving for LP records, because he's got his LPs in the house in boxes. They've been in boxes for years and years, and they never got them out. So she was the moving force behind making sure that they got some proper shelves. And so they've done that. They've constructed them, and he's got all his records out, and he's put them all on the shelves. And he says, last night at dinner, my wife and admitted that your Word in Your Attic videos inspired her to research the shelving and to want to put the records out. She specifically pointed to you, that's me, as the inspiration for the shelves. She thinks the look of the attic where you film those videos looks cool. So,
as it does,
I'm just thrilled.
That's fantastic. The
first time in my life that I've been, you know, I've had influence over home decor, you know.
Completely. I think you should extend this, Dave. I think you could get a brand of wallpaper done. So I think it'd be fantastic.
Oh,
so you get wallpaper and you do it in such a high definition photograph that you can read the sleeves. You can read the spines of the sleeves and see what all the records are. Can you imagine how you say if this was somebody's record like yours, somebody's record, you could actually see a real record collection. You could go down and study every single record. Wouldn't that be thrilling? Wouldn't it look great? And everybody's got some little den somewhere.
That's a bloody brilliant idea, that is. Do you remember, you're not old enough, the Dobell's, the old jazz and blues record shop on Charing Cross Road?
I never went to it. I never did.
Okay,
yeah.
I went a few times. And they used to have a very distinctive plastic carrier bag. If you bought a record from Dobell's, which generally are kind of B.B. King Live at the Regal or James Van Ronk or, you know, some Louis Armstrong record or whatever, they would put it in a bag, which is black and white, but really nice bag, and that was a load of spines of records. And you sit on the tube going home and you just pour over those.
Because just think the amount of entertainment and information per square foot contained in looking at your records, you know, it is absolutely riveting, don't you think?
Yeah, well, as
they've got that worn quality to them. They've got those little idiosyncrasies.
I don't think you wouldn't feel so warm if you could see closer up, I think. But anyway, you know, I think your idea of LP wallpaper is a really good idea.
For dens, for kind of, you know, for man caves.
Especially for dens. That's for a dens. Good selling line. Especially yeah. for dens.
It works. It works.
The Word Podcast, walking the digital dog since 2007.
And now back to the subject that simply won't die. We raised last week the subject of do bands play their, particularly their big hits, too fast on stage? And we got lots of feedback. Most of it uninformed, but we got some feedback from the odd person who really knew what they were talking about. And here I'm talking about Owen Park, a friend of the pod and professional musician. Now, Owen, you were able to do a bit of laboratory work here, weren't you, to see if this is a fallacy or a fact?
Well, I just thought if I could get a test tube and a Bunsen burner, I'd like to hear the live version at the original speed when they recorded it.
So we're talking about the Rolling Stones here.
Yes, the Rolling Stones' Brown Sugar. Because you said, oh, it was actually Satisfaction. You said they'd never played it that well again after the after they'd recorded it. And I think with Brown Sugar as well. So I basically looked at what the tempos are. You just press a button on the computer. And it was about 10 beats per minute more for live. So that's really
faster.
Quite a lot.
Faster.
So I, yes, faster. So I then put in the live version, slowed it down to the original, and it just worked a lot more. It had a swagger. The original, if you want the numbers, starts at 124 BPM, but the live version starts at 136.
So yeah, it's more than 10 beats per minute faster. So this was something, when we raised this last week, this was something you as an experienced musician, you recognised this, didn't
yes.
you? That bands yeah. do this. You didn't have any difficulty in recognising that.
No,
why do they do it in your experience? Why do bands play things faster on stage?
Well, what I found funny with this was that it actually went faster for the sax solo, but it slows down on the studio version for the sax solo. I don't know if there's a roar from the crowd or Mick does a bum wiggle or something and everyone kind of, hey, we'll go faster, whatever it is, I don't know. But it's, I mean, Keith starts it. Who knows what fun stuff he's on to make him play fast.
If you play faster, does it give it a sense of urgency? Is that the reason that they do it? Does it somehow make it seem more exciting just to have it faster?
Yeah, there's always been an unwritten sort of rule, which I don't really agree with, because I think you lose all the heart and soul and the swagger of a song.
Absolutely,
and it's harder to dance to.
Absolutely.
You can kind of... And I don't know. I mean, I put something up on Facebook an hour ago in preparation for this and basically said, can I have some examples? And loads of fellow musicians have come in. Someone's actually said, Honky Tonk Woman, it's hilarious. And my friend Alex replied, it's like Charlie's left the oven on. It's because it does, it just races, But that's the recorded version. But this is clearly that they're not using a click track, basically. But a lot of live bands now will use a click track. I actually know of one, I won't name the artist, he was so fond of some jazz woodbines that he would berate the drummer afterwards and say, you were speeding up, until the drummer got a metronome. They weren't running any track out front of the PA, it was just literally, so the drummer had donk, 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 and after the first gig, he did the whole gig on metronome, where he was matching the speeds for the recorded versions, the singer still went, you were speeding up. He said, I can't have sped up at all night because
right.
I have been, you know, straitjacketed by this thing. And it was just in the singer's head that
yeah.
it was so speeding
up. So do most groups use a click track? I'm playing in big venues. Do they use a click track to time themselves?
Yes.
On each
I mean, I
that's really interesting.
I play live with Robbie Williams covering for Guy Chambers. So I'm his dep. And because those gigs are so huge, the production managers kind of insist on it for the multimedia and the pyrotechnics and the
yes.
dance routines
yeah.
and the show that it is. So it's kind of terrifying because you are about to go. I did a gig at a stadium in Romania and I hadn't done a stadium gig before. It was my first and only one. It was last summer. And we start with Let Me Entertain You, which is a deceptively tricky piano part. And you're there with your ears and you get one, two, One, two, three, four. Donk, 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 donk. And you have to play it correctly, well, with feeling, without the wheels falling off, in front of all those people, and try and not basically lose your mind with ding, donk, donk. It was Steve Albini, the producer who hates Click Track. He said playing with Click Track is like driving with the police in your rearview mirror. Because right. It is this...
incredible. So distracting.
And but
presumably it makes it impossible to be spontaneous. It can a big gig like that. Can somebody on the spur of the moment decide to put a different song into the set list?
There are songs...
It must be really hard with all
there
the cues.
There are songs we do which are off, which are more kind of Vegas. See, I did a run in Vegas with Robbie last summer as well, and there were quite a few there where you would do the kind of Vegas Elvis type thing where you can, you know, and then you'd come in and you speed up and you slow down. But the big hits, I mean, especially if, you know, I mean, there was a story, the song he does, She's the One, which is a Carl Wallinger World Party song. I hadn't run this with them ever. And then suddenly he's out on the vanity rant, Robbie, and he said, right, we're going to do She's the One, hit it. And I got, and I thought, am I in after three? I am in after three because I have no notes either. And he went, one, two, three, ba-da-da. And I'm looking over at the bass player going, is this right? And then you wait until comes in with these backing vocals, which are on track or some synth part or something. And you go, oh, I was right. It's terrifying.
Absolutely. That's incredible.
It's like you're trying to keep up with the record, effectively. Obviously, not all of it, but, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. I heard a horrible story about a guy who was playing with Bonnie Tyler at the height of her fame, when 83, 84, when the big songs were number one around the world. And he was filming, they had crews at Hammersmith Odeon, and he was stopped from going on. She did a song just with her pianist. And then the big song, Total Eclipse, and they were using Click Track then, and he couldn't, some security guard stopped him from getting on stage, and he goes, I need to be there, because if I miss beat one, the whole thing's screwed. And he got there, and he saw this thing flashing. He put his headphones on, he didn't know where one, two, three, or four correlated, and went, one, two, three, four, turn around, and it was only the bit where the backing vocals come in, turn around, blah, and it was out of sync. So she went, turn around, and the whole thing just went, which wasn't his fault.
No, I'm sure.
Things will go wrong when, because it's not flexible. That train is off. And
that's complicated.
But you see, Bruce and the E Street Band, they'll be live. And they play Born to Run pretty well, right? They don't.
We talked about this last week, and we decided that Springsteen doesn't speed up.
No,
in my experience, he's very faithful to the sound of the record. And I think he's very respectful of that, and that's one of the things that interests me. That I often think that the audience, when you go back to the Rolling Stones or Satisfaction or Honky Tonk Women or whatever. This sounds ridiculous to say, but they sort of don't know those records as well as we do.
No,
listen to them millions of times.
And we only know one version of it, really, which is the one on the record. They've got a million versions that they've tried.
I did read, one of you may have written the article when talking about the new McCartney band, 20 years. They taught McCartney the songs.
I'm sure they did.
And they'd say, it doesn't actually go like that.
Well, that's fair enough, because they would have played it, and he probably, in some cases, would never anything after 1966. He wouldn't have played it live anyway.
No, I did a little bit of tempo mapping on Ringo, because he gets a lot of flat, Ringo, and Charlie gets the, Charlie's a jazz drummer, so he's, you know, it was always like more revered than Ringo, and Ringo's pretty steady. It doesn't, but that's, you know, I didn't want to hold your hand and Ticket to Ride and stuff. And they speed up for the B section, and then they come back down. But I heard some people saying here? Street Life by the Crusaders is unrecognisable by the end, the album version, from how it starts. Harvest for the World, the Isley Brothers, ramps up 20 BPM in the first 8 bars. And it just got motors.
You think of the Isley Brothers as being the masters of it. If anybody was in control of it, you would have thought they would be.
Absolutely.
You?
And Superstition, which is
Stevie Wonder,
is an interesting one, because he's playing everything.
Yes.
So it's not people in a room vibing. It's just he probably laid down the I don't know, maybe a clav part, and then it would have been drums. He probably put the drums down and then followed his drums. I don't know. But there's about 10 clav parts on that song. It's really
That's the
weird.
Recorded version you're talking about.
Yeah, yeah,
that's
yeah.
Astonishing, that's astonishing, isn't it?
That speeds up. Goodbye to Love, Carpenters speeds up. Message in a Bottle.
Message in a Bottle, I'm not surprised at that at all. Yeah. Even
I can detect someone that. Said Magical Mystery Tour, and I know Alex said on the last podcast, but I think that is... I think that's a more of a kind of vision sort of thing, because it's getting on the bus and the magic, and it slows down. I think it's in sections where it wants to do that.
Well, it's the refrain. The refrain comes back faster. That's what it is.
After the trippy kind of bridge, middle eight. I just think it's, come on, let's come back and let's get going.
So generally speaking, though, that presumably, if a good example, Britney Spears. If you go and see Britney Spears, you're going to get Baby One More Time played pretty much faithfully as it was on the record, aren't you?
You'll have backing vocals of her age 15, 16 and Max Martin coming through the PA, basically. I've been to see Pet Shop Boys play and I'm playing synths because I made an album with them, and they just keep the things that you use. I hear my backing vocals.
You're sitting in the audience, you hear yourself live.
And you go, I'm sort of playing the O2, but I'm not.
Amazing.
Yeah. Owen, that's fantastic. That's really useful.
Also, you've introduced me to another new phrase I didn't know, apart from tempo map, which was vanity ramp. Because Robbie Williams was out on the vanity ramp.
That's
when you go out into the crowd. Is that what you call that?
Yes.
Is that the official name for it?
I don't know where I first heard that.
So you go out and showboat on that avenue.
Absolutely.
That's fantastic. I love the idea of the artist being in a different postal code from the musical.
Yeah.
So far away.
Yeah.
Well, Owen, thank you very much indeed.
Pleasure.
Wish we'd be back with you in due course, no doubt, for more light thrown on dark areas. Cheers. Excellent.
Thank you.
All the best.
Pleasure. Bye-bye.
Bye.
The Word Podcast, one of the few things you really need in life.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
So I went into town this week, Mark. That's very exciting going
That's
into
exciting
town.
In itself.
I find everything just really stimulating. You know, I sit opposite people on the bus and I think, I could write a story about you, you know, just on the basis of 2 minutes. Because you're
so starved of seeing other people.
Absolutely.
And that's true. It's true.
It's just that kind of thing. Anyway, I went to FOP. I got these. I bought some CDs. I bought 2 CDs when promising myself I was going to buy for ages. I bought Miles Davis, Porky and Bess. Miles Davis, Miles Ahead. And
Can't go wrong with those.
And then I went to the Rough Trade East, and because I was signing some books for their mail order operation. And I was talking to somebody in there. I said, you know, how much of your trade do you think is CD and how much record? She said, well, I think it's mainly record now, you know. Probably, you know, tilting more and more towards records. And we were discussing about, would CD survive? You know, would it still go
well, on? Well, we were talking to our producer, Magic Alex, about this, who's got a huge CD collection and no CD player. And I think you tweeted something about it.
We've got a whole room of CDs behind me.
That whole room of CDs. And we've got one slightly ropey old CD player in the kitchen. And if we listen to them at all, we listen to them in the car. You know, you get to the point where you listen to things on Spotify or they're ripped or whatever, but you never actually play them. And it's clearly the case.
So I did this survey, and clearly it is the case. You know, hundreds of people got back saying, "Yep, got loads of CDs." You got some people saying, "Yes, I still buy them." And I then rip them to my, you know, computer, which is increasingly a difficult thing to do because very often, if you buy a Mac, it won't have a disk drive anymore, you know. So
that's right.
Harder and harder all the time. And so some people are just buying CDs and then just putting them away in a shelf and not actually playing them at all. And I often think about this, you know, because I know there's no romance to the CD at all. I know it's the music carrier that nobody loves. You know, it's impossible. You can't fall in love with it. It's just it's the way you can't.
And it doesn't. Nobody ever talks about my copy of a CD.
No, absolutely.
Because there's nothing that makes it any different. There's no
But on the other hand, I don't think it can disappear, because I think it then leads you down a very dark place as far as, you know, music and the reproduction of music and the things that we all respond to about music, you know, that you end up being, you know, here's my question to you, Mark Kellen. The music buying experience, is it closest to the book buying experience or to the movie going experience? Which of the two does it have most in common with? Over to you, Park.
That's tricky. The movie buying experience.
Well, it's not movie buying, movie watching.
Movie watching.
Because movie watching is a social act. I'm going to cut through here. Movie watching is a social activity. You go, generally speaking.
It's a book buying thing. It's book buying. Because book buying is you don't share with anybody else. And it's a personal reacquaintance with that thing.
So, yeah. Listen, I mean, you know, I publish books and lots of people read them on Kindles or audio books or whatever, and that's absolutely fine, you know. But the majority of people still buy, you know, a hardback or a paperback book. That's what they kind of relate to. And if I woke up one morning, the publisher said, "Well, all right, the market for physical product here has disappeared, and so your book's just going to be sent down the line as a load of noughts and ones, and it'll either reproduce itself as sound in people's ears or as something they read on a Kindle or a tablet or whatever," I'd feel really bad about that.
Absolutely right.
You know, because you think, well, what have I done? You know, it's like you're taking, once you make it available purely online, you're not making a thing. You're providing a service.
Completely. There's no object there. There's that fondness of picking up books that you've read before. You get them out of the shelf, and there they are, and there's what you wrote in them in 1976. You know, the curled up edges of the paper, the coffee stains, those things, I don't know why. There's just, they connect with you, don't they?
So, you know, these records, you know, I could listen to these on Spotify, on, you know, Amazon Music or God knows what. It's perfectly freely available. But, you know, I love these records and I didn't own them. And I wanted to go and own them. I wanted to have them, you know. And since I got them, you know, I played them a few times at home, you know, and I may not continue to play them, but I'd feel lost if I didn't have them.
But surely a lot of people, no, I totally agree with you, but it must be a lot of people who don't feel the same way because they've got a room full of CDs. It's taking up space. Is there going to be a massive tonnage of CDs out on the secondhand market?
Well, I think
or is there going to be a kind of revival? Like vinyl, which I think is very unlikely. I don't think, will there be a CD revival? Hardly.
Well,
because it's hard to be fond of them.
It's hard to be fond of them, I agree. But that doesn't have to be the only reason why people might decide that they want them. You know, that if everything just disappears into, if everything just goes into the one big tap and you just turn it on and you take the direction that you want.
Yeah.
It changes the nature of the creation of music, I think, you know, because for 50, 60 years, that's been what it's been. You know, it's been, I make a single or I make an LP or whatever. And then the LP was supplanted by the cassette, first of all, and then the CD. And you know, now it's disappeared to into a tap, you know, and it has approximately the same emotional engagement as the tap in your kitchen.
Because
you'd miss if it wasn't there. But yeah. You don't come over with it. Whoopee, must play with a tap.
But there's no sense that you own it. So you don't feel, you feel very detached from it, don't you? It's just a piece of entertainment you can turn on and turn off.
So
it's not yours.
You know, all I would say is that loads of people really happily got rid of their LPs and thought, phew, thank God I got rid of those. I've got the CDs instead. And I think most of them, well, I don't know about most of them.
Will regret that, wish it was the other way around.
They already regret it.
Yeah, saying I should have kept the vinyl and got rid of the CDs.
Yeah,
absolutely.
It just made me think all this response to my tweet. You know, the people with thousands of CDs, and you mentioned you got one in your car.
Yeah.
Well, may I say that's probably because you've got a vintage car.
You've got quite an old car, I know. We got the new Dylan one. CD not very long ago because we pretty much had to go to for a drive just to be able to listen to it. Because the one of the CD player in the kitchen is pretty ropey, you know. Extraordinary.
So if you look at, you know, the average suburban street like you and I live in, you know, if you look down the street, you think to yourself, down the street
what,
are 10,000 CDs. More than 10,000.
And just think how much money was invested. They may be virtually worthless now, but, you know, let's not forget, in 1985, a CD was 16 quid. And yeah. 16 quid is the equivalent of £45 today.
Okay, here's my confident prediction. The £16 CD will be back.
Oh, right.
Well, because companies will need incentivizing to make them, because the market's not going to be that huge. And so if you want, you know, I bought this for whatever it was, 7 quid. Frankly, it's 15 quid's worth, really, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And if they charged me 15 quid, I would have got it as well. So, you know, CDs were rare and valuable, weren't they? When you got your first CD, you didn't care how much you paid for it, because it was an exciting new experience over an LP.
Do you remember when CDs arrived, people just say, what's your favourite CD?
Yes, they did.
Because there were so few of them.
We did that little booklet with the first issue of Q.
Yeah, we did, that's
the
right.
The best CDs.
Best CDs available, and there were only about 100. That's right, well, most of those were by Dire Straits.
There weren't an awful lot more.
No, it's true.
So, you know, I think in order to keep these things produced, I think that price will go up. That's what I think. So, you know, you can laugh at me in due course if I'm wrong.
But brace yourself. $16.99 will return.
The Word Podcast. Fix yourself a drink and it's like being in the pub.
You're either watching or listening to The Word Podcast, one of our many fine services, alongside our Word in Your Attic and our regular crowdcast interviews with authors of newly published books, and also our regular weekly Can You Tell Who It Is Yet quiz. There's only one way to make sure that you can take part in all of these things, that you get them first, and that's to sign up to be a Patreon. And so Mark will tell us who's joined us this last week.
Yeah, that quiz, by the way, is on Friday nights at 6 o'clock. It's absolutely excellent. New patrons, can we please welcome aboard? And we're thrilled to have them with us. Actually, three annual patrons first, which is John Pickles, Dickie Dangerous Chateau, and Gareth Jones, and also Adam Keane, Ian McKenzie, Gary Steagles, and Tom Tiordzuk. So thanks very much for signing up. We appreciate it.
Absolutely. And anybody who wants to know more about it, just go to patreon.com/wordinyourear. We'll see you next week.
See you then.
This podcast was brought to you by The Word.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue.
Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Welcome back to Two Judgy Girls. I'm Mary from the Bay.
And I'm Courtney from LA. TJG is the podcast where we spill all the tea on your favorite reality TV shows, celebrity gossip, and everything in between. We're here to bring you our unfiltered opinions, hilarious commentary, and plenty of laughs along the way.
We're two SDSU Delta Gamma sisters with a microphone and a whole lot of opinions. Each week, we dive headfirst into the wild world of reality television, from Bravo to all the trash TV you could want. We break down the drama, dissect the latest scandals, and share our thoughts on everything from the jaw-dropping moments to the embarrassing antics.
But that's not all. We're not here to just gossip. We're here to connect with you, the jurors, and share our love of all things pop culture. Whether we're dishing on the latest celebrity breakups, discussing our favorite guilty pleasure movies, or sharing embarrassing stories from our own lives, we promise to keep it real, keep it fun, and keep you coming back for more.
Come judge with us.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.